humiliated and humbled in last year's election, Labour has spent its first months back in opposition, licking its wounds. This week, it promised a comeback.
Our challenge over the next 2 years is to make sure that we build Labour into a winning machine so that when the next election rolls around, we can form government again.
Kia ora ko Craig McCullough-Kahu, nei te pūrongo tōrangapū mō tēnei wiki. Welcome to Focus on Politics. I'm Craig McCullough. The quintessential caucus retreat has proved of late to be consequential. In 2019, Jacinda Ardern used Labour's to unveil her regrettable Year of Delivery moniker. A year later, at Nationals gathering, Simon Bridges ruled out working with New Zealand First. And of course, last year, Jacinda Ardern announced her resignation as Prime Minister, as recalled this week on Morning Report.
And so today I'm announcing that I will not be seeking re-election.
I must say, it seems like a lot longer than a year ago.
You think it feels that way for you?
Believe it or not, this week's retreat was Chris Hipkins' first as Labour leader, and Labour's first since being turfed out of power. The party's shift in status has not gone unnoticed, the difference underscored by the venue. On Thursday, MPs assembled back at Brackenridge Country Retreat in Martinborough, their one-time regular getaway spot, until their caucus outgrew it in 2020. With their team whittled back down by the recent election, the venue size is no longer a concern.
Good morning. Great to see everybody here, very enthusiastic as you all are.
Labour's retreat was delayed this year from its usual slot in January or early Feb, rescheduled in part due to the shorter summer break, but also to allow more time to think. In his opening speech, Chris Hipkins sought to rally the troops.
I want to make sure that when the next election rolls around, we are the best prepared potential incoming government that New Zealand has ever seen. That we don't just have good ideas, but we've actually worked them through to the point where we know how they will be implemented, we know what they're going to cost, we know when they will be implemented, and we can demonstrate that to New Zealanders when we hit the campaign trail.
But if people were hoping to hear some of those ideas this week, a glimmer of that plan, they would have been sorely disappointed. Perhaps some proposals were thrashed out behind closed doors, but they were certainly not made public. The slate intentionally kept clean, including on that critical question of tax. Will Labour revive a wealth tax or a capital gains tax? Neither or both.
I'm focusing on my lunch right now.
Both of them are a tax on capital. It's a good discussion to have.
We've got to work through that very, very carefully.
Too early to say.
There is a discussion within Labour as to whether it should be a capital gains tax or a wealth tax, but that's a very proper debate to have, and that's not division, that's just a debate about what's best.
But there's no rush to settle that debate, with the election still 2.5 years away, but the caucus will face a curly question on tax much sooner. The Party Māori's bill to remove GST off food has been drawn from the ballot and will come up for debate this year. The legislation's doomed to fail without the support of the coalition parties, but Labour's vote one way or the other will give an indication of its direction. Former candidate, now commentator Shane Tupou, thinks it is a no-brainer.
Either you're going to vote with the coalition government or you're going to try and build a coalition on the left. And I think if Labour votes against this bill, a lot of Labour supporters will be very unhappy and they will not forgive or forget.
That's all very well, but as a mainstream party, Labour must also present as economically credible. The GST proposal comes with an enormous price tag, and as canvassed during the recent campaign, is not one favoured by economists of any stripe. And that will be weighing on the minds of Labour MPs.
We're having a conversation about that bill. We haven't formalised our final position on that yet. Once we do, I'll let you know.
The party has not moved much in the polls since the election, and in fact slipped slightly in the latest, prompting the inevitable question of leadership. There's no suggestion of an imminent uprising against Chris Hipkins, in part due to a lack of appetite from potential contenders, with the election still so far away. That didn't stop Nationals' Christopher Luxon, though, from needling the issue.
Chris Hipkins is a desperate individual, right? And it's great that he's having his off-site today, and I noticed it's in Kieran McAnulty's Wairarapa district, which is lovely.
I'll still be the leader of the Labour Party long after Christopher Luxon's been rolled as the leader of the National Party.
Things were going well for the Prime Minister. He wouldn't feel the need to start talking about that sort of nonsense. I've made it really clear, as has everyone in the caucus, that we are 100% behind Chippy. We back him. We want him to be our leader and we want him to be the next PM.
Labour's refocus comes at a dynamic time in the political landscape, with a three-headed coalition and three parties in opposition, each competing for a slice of the electoral pie. The Party Māori is increasingly stealing the headlines with its often extreme rhetoric, while the Greens have made no bones about their aspiration to become the dominant opposition voice. Just this week, newly established co-leader Chloe Swarbrick threw down the gauntlet.
I joined the Green Party because I believe that the Greens have always been the party that has shown the courage of their convictions. We've always been the party, as far as I've seen it, that has put our values into practice with evidence-based policies that will actually work. And I do therefore believe that we are the leading voice on the left. And it is my job to translate that into political power, into seats in Parliament.
It is a lofty and perhaps unlikely ambition, but one Labour should be aware of as it repositions. Michael Swanson is a PhD candidate at the University of Otago, researching the role of the opposition in New Zealand's political sphere. I spoke to him about the difficulties and the dilemmas facing the Labour Party.
There's things that Labour could do, but one of the real big side effects of doing that this early on is that they would need to admit that they did things wrong in the previous 6 years, which is a really hard thing for a political party and political leaders to do, to say, you know what, we didn't do this and we should have, or we got this wrong, please give us another go. So there are things he could do, like actually say, we heard loud and clear that actually people wanted to talk about a capital gains tax, give us another go and we'll go back to that. But it would be admitting that he got it wrong first time round.
And is that where the available voters actually are? If you look at the election result and you see that it was a right-wing government elected, a New Zealand First Act national coalition, I mean, is there going to be an appetite among those voters for, say, a capital gains tax? Is that how Labour's going to win back those votes? Or is it actually just going to end up squabbling with the Greens and Te Pāti Māori for those left-wing voters?
You're always going to have that squabbling for votes amongst either of these groups, but it's that centre vote that you've got to try and pick up. And the centre vote, obviously, in 2023 said, we don't feel like the country is moving in the right direction, so we're going to give the other guys a go. And it's one of those sayings, and it's one that slightly annoys me given my research, is that opposition don't win elections, governments lose them. Actually, Chris Hipkins should probably be sitting there going, what are the things we didn't do that people were telling us we should have done, and would that work if we put that back on the table?
Do you think Labour knows what it stands for? Do you think it knows what type of party it is at the moment? And does that question even matter? I mean, when we look at the recent election, for example, what were people voting for? Was it around values and principles, or was it more about just competence?
There was an issue of people going, I don't know what Labour are doing for me. If you look at where a lot of the votes moved to, it was a lot of those blue-collar workers actually voting for people like New Zealand First and even ACT. So Labour really do have an issue there of what do we stand for, who do we represent? Not just what do we represent, but who do we represent is really important. Because, like I said, for a long time it's been set up around the likes of the union movements and those sorts of big blocks of blue-collar workers, and how do we get back to that? How do we get back to those people and help them understand that the ideas that we have are the things that are going to benefit their lives? And at the moment, obviously looking at the 2023 election result, that wasn't obvious to them.
Inevitably, always the question of leadership comes up. Is Chris Hipkins still the man for the job?
One of the things that is interesting about Chris Hipkins is that he's probably been a better opposition MP than he was government MP. A lot of people won't see it because it's not something they see every day, but if you watch him when he's in the House, he is very combative. He's a very good debater. He's very good at picking up on issues and zeroing in on them very quickly. And that's fantastic as an opposition MP, but that doesn't necessarily win votes. And that's the big question for Labour, is who is going to fill that void? Who is the person that is going to actually bring those people back who went to National or New Zealand First and bring them back to Labour? What does that person stand for? Who do they represent? And they have a few names, but whether they'll be the type of person that would be ready for 2026 is the big question.
Yes, I think Chris Hipkins has probably helped by the fact that there is no obvious contender waiting in the wings right now. But some of the names that have been floating around, of course, Kieran McAnulty, Carmel Cipollone, perhaps even Pieni Henare as options. What do you make of them, and are there any other names that jump out to you?
Yeah, those are probably the front runners. I think, actually, if you look at what type of person or the type of figure you would want for 2026, then that McAnulty-Cipollone combination might not be a bad idea. Kieran McAnulty kind of brings in that classic Kiwi hard yakka kind of approach, and Carmel Cipollone brings the approach that they need to reach out to some of those communities that they need voting for them, particularly Pacific Island communities, Māori communities that they need to try and draw back in. So if you're looking at voters that they need to win back, then those two really represent a good option. Labour really have that question of, do we stand behind Chris Hipkins to 2026, see how that goes, and then make a change, or do we make a change now for a long-term shift, looking to actually a five-year plan away from being ultimately successful?
The limited leadership contenders, I think, also speaks to the health of the caucus, with them losing a lot of experience recently, the biggest loss, of course, being Grant Robertson, but also we saw Andrew Little and Calvin Davis, and then, of course, the MPs that didn't make it back at the election. How do you rate the caucus health at the moment, and is that a problem for Labour?
I think it is a problem. Losing a lot of those people has been a real hit. And that's why, looking to 2026, it's very much going to be clawing back. How do we rebuild? How do we bring in new talent? It's also not just about bringing in new young talent. It's about how can they attract high-profile names from areas that they need to gain support from. So they should be probably looking at who in the sorts of union movements might be primed for coming in and making that immediate impact, who are out there in the sort of the teaching professions, all those sorts of things that are high profile people that could come in and really make an impact quickly.
The other parties in opposition also, of course, play into this dynamic. The Greens have a new co-leader now in Chloe Swarbrick. How do you see that changing the dynamic for Labour?
One of the big differences between Chloe Swarbrick and James Shaw is James Shaw was kind of he was very much focused on the environmental issues, the climate change side of things, and he was very pragmatic and very constructive in the way that he approaches a lot of issues. Chloe Swarbrick, on the other hand, is a bit of a firebrand, I guess you'd say, in terms of personal politics. You know, she's managed to get quite a strong following, particularly a youth following behind her. But she has made no secret that she sees her role as, you know, pushing the Greens to almost supplant Labour.
Is that a viable strategy, do you think?
I personally am sceptical. A lot of those voters who voted for James Shaw were actually quite middle New Zealand. They saw him as a pragmatic voice on the environment, someone who wanted to make real change without making dramatic instant change, and whether they will be turned off by that is kind of the big question. Where they go afterwards is also another big question, and a fair chunk of them might just go back to Labour.
Should Labour be doing anything differently in order to try and maximise that outcome?
If I was Labour, I would almost not necessarily ignore the Greens, but focus on their own policy and people. If you spend too much time talking about what you're going to do with the Greens or what the Greens are saying and doing and the way they are acting, then that distracts from what you want to do and how you want to be perceived. So Labour's whole strategy from here should be, what does Labour stand for and what will we do if you bring us back into government? That should be their sole purpose.
Is there a way you can see the numbers working for Labour, how it can get itself into a position where it can cobble together enough votes in order to get back into power? The way I see it, New Zealand First is a real problem for it, because as long as New Zealand First is there in Parliament and those two parties won't work together, it's very hard to make those numbers work.
Yeah, I think the distance between Labour and New Zealand First now is so great that you won't see in
the next decade at least, a repeat of 2017. So the only way that Labor could really see a, sort of a light spot is for New Zealand First to diminish and be depleted somehow. And that could be by actually Labor cannibalising a bit more back, but actually a number of those voters going to National Act would actually benefit, because if New Zealand First dropped below the 5% threshold, then suddenly that changes the dynamic greatly.
A lot of water to go under the bridge before then, and a long road yet for Labor to climb. Chris Hipkins has promised to deliver two key speeches in the coming weeks, one on the party's values and another on its vision. The fact he considers that necessary, and rightly so, illustrates the trouble Labor is in. That's Focus on Politics. I'm Craig McCulloch. Thanks for joining me. Matua.